And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to this preview edition sponsored, Luke, by the Goal Line Club.
Yeah, absolutely. If people are interested in learning more about the Goal Line Club, you can go to their website, GoalLineClub.org. This is a group that is like a booster club that supports Gopher football and Gopher football only. Very low membership fee to join. Highly suggested. I'm a member. I'd be very excited to see many of you join as well. It's a good way to get to know other Gopher fans through events, etc. So GoalLineClub.org.
I think we probably got to start this episode on a somber note. Luke messaged me this afternoon while I was out and about that, unfortunately, former Gopher offensive tackle Nick Conley passed away today after a battle with cancer. Luke and I were just talking about it in the pre-production meeting that this time last year we were talking about how well he was playing at right tackle for Minnesota, and things took a turn. Concussions ended his career. He was diagnosed with cancer over the summer. And unfortunately, that battle ended today. So we do want to pass along our condolences to the entire Conley family. As someone in my position to where I get to know these players in the recruiting process, I've had nothing but good things to say about Nick or his family. And it's just a reminder how precious life is, and make sure those that mean the most to you know how much you love them. So it's a somber note to start out on tonight, Luke.
Yeah. Having to experience this as a family member, friend, or whatever is never fun. We're thinking about your family. If any of the Conleys are listening, great football player. You don't get to Division I in the Big Ten, regardless of what people think. And you're not a heck of a football player. And it sounds like he was even a better person, which is always great to hear. So sad to hear it. But it'll be neat that the team will be honoring him wearing a decal for at least the Maryland game and some sort of wristband as well.
I'd imagine they probably have both of those for the remainder of the season.
Considering
if you've looked at Twitter today, there's a lot of players and coaches pretty beat up about it. Which, understandably so, losing a life at the age of 22 when, like I said, this time last year, he was battling in the trenches with the rest of them, and unfortunately, things took a turn. So it's a somber reality, Luke.
Yeah, and this is nothing new to Gopher football of late. Like, there was the Gary Tinsley thing, during the Jerry Kill regime as well. And additionally, JoJo Garcia, a totally different situation, but... life is precious, and it affects lots of people, and it's really sad. It's just too bad that it had to come to this, and it just cancer sucks, man. It's just the worst.
Cancer sucks is a pretty good way to put a bow on it.
All right, so we probably gotta talk a little bit about this Gopher Maryland game. Get into that. I guess maybe we should start injuries and depth chart. I think people are very well aware. Zach Anixted suffered an ankle injury. Tanner Morgan played a little bit in that game. All indications are that he's a go. But Ryan, what are your thoughts on Anixted and just maybe some observations from the depth chart and injuries going into this game at Maryland?
You mentioned it. The biggest injury that we were watching was Zach Anixted, and I put that in the past tense because I talked about it on Gopher Illustrated following PJ Fleck's press conference on Tuesday, that as I was leaving the building, the brand new athletics facility there, Zach, who walks in as I walk in? Zach Anixted, wearing boat shoes, walking just fine, no socks, no brace, no boot. And I'm not too concerned about it unless there's some kind of midweek setback that I don't foresee at this current state in time. PJ talked about how he took all the reps on Tuesday. People a little bit skeptical on Twitter. I was a little bit skeptical about that. But me being able to put my own two eyes on it just happened to be at the right place at the right time. So Zach Anixted looks like he's going to be ready to go for this weekend. You're also going to have a revenge game for Mohamed Ibrahim this weekend, returning from 2 weeks of injury. I believe he is going to be ready to go. I think he was probably around 85-90% last Saturday, but PJ Fleck didn't want to play him. thought he could get it done against Miami of Ohio without him. Plus, this game is going to mean a lot to Mohamed Ibrahim. He's from the state of Maryland. Maryland did not pursue him very hard, and he gets to go on the road back home to Maryland and likely get somewhere between 10 and 15 touches is what I would imagine, trying to help shoulder the load for Bryce Williams. Other than that, I know some people were talking about Blake Cashman looked a little dinged up. I saw it on TV. He came back and he played in the second half. Connor Olson, how is he? He missed one play. I imagine Minnesota is going to be full bore from last weekend. They get Mohamed Ibrahim back. Zach Anik said his ankle looks good. And then in terms of the depth chart for both schools, Luke, I think it's going to be a little interesting to see how it looks, because as we record this on Thursday, tomorrow is the big day for Maryland. That's when the DJ Durkin report gets released by the Board of Regents out at Maryland. We have no idea what to expect for repercussions. Are there going to be more coaches suspended? Is DJ Durkin going to lose his job? Is the president going to lose his job? Could players be wrapped up in this? Because there are some suspicious circumstances as to which Maryland's starting two tackles for last week were not in uniform. And none of the Maryland beat writers knew why. Matt Canada says they were quote-unquote injured. No, I don't really buy that. Now, they're supposed to be back here this weekend, which, again, tells me that what are the chances that both starting tackles, Luke, you're an elite math mind, that they both get injured in practice on the same week, don't play, but they're both going to be ready to go for Minnesota. What are the chances of that?
I mean, it seems pretty peculiar.
It is a little bit peculiar. But as we record this here on Thursday, I am expecting both starting tackles to be back for Maryland. Maryland offensive line that really struggled last week without him. I believe they gave up 9 sacks. But getting both your starting tackles back means a lot. And I believe they're also going to get back Lolo Harrison, one of their running backs, something that we'll get into here in a bit. This is a very potent Maryland rushing attack, but this is a very anemic Maryland passing game. Other than that, when you look at the Minnesota depth chart, not a whole lot's changed. Mohamed Ibrahim and Bryce Williams still listed as co-starters. Zach Anikstead still QB1. I'm expecting a whole lot of the same from last week where you saw Minnesota go to that base 4-3 look. Other than that, I don't think there's a whole lot to discuss otherwise, Luke.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers are on defense. You already kind of alluded to it. Maryland's a squad that is averaging 31 points a game thus far this season. 389 yards of total offense, but only 149 of those are coming through the air. So about 240 are on the ground. You very much said it. Their identity is in the run game. This is the concern we've had more or less, you know, all preseason, even through these first, you know, 3 non-conference games. We're really still not sure, you know, what the Gopher defense is because of the struggles they had last year against the run. And this seems to be, you know, assuming that there isn't major fallout due to the report from the Board of Regents, this seems to be the first true running test.
It does. I asked Rob Smith about that this week when we had coordinator availability. I asked him, what makes you so confident that your run defense is going to be improved this year when it wasn't last year when you got the Big Ten play? Didn't really answer the question. Kind of just said, can't compare the two teams. But I'm a little bit worried about it. I mean, we've talked about this for how many months now, Luke?
It's been the better part of like 2 or 3 months.
About how this was going to be the game in 2 days that would tell us a lot about, is this run defense improved? I went back last year and I looked at the stats. Minnesota's run defense last year in the non-conference, they're limited to 3.26 yards per carry. That's pretty good against running backs. And then came Big Ten play. Big Ten running backs averaged over 6 yards a carry. And on the road, they averaged over 7 yards a carry. Running backs ate Minnesota alive. Now, I know that things have looked very good so far this year. In the non-conference here, running backs are still under 4 yards carry, 3.72. So it's up a little bit from last year, about a half yard. But even still, having running backs going against your defense under 4 yards of carry, that's pretty good. The question is going to be, can this team stop the run? Because this is a Maryland team that started this trend last year with Ty Johnson and Lorenzo Harrison. They combined for over 200 rushing yards on 5.86 yards a carry. Now, I'll agree that this Minnesota defense looks a little bit different. Antoine Winfield is healthy. He played about a quarter of the Maryland game and knocked out.
Yeah, I was going to say, this was the game he got hurt in, though, right? So he really was basically a non-factor.
So another revenge game narrative for Antoine Winfield,
There's one way to look at it.
A lot of revenge game narratives. You know what we're going down tonight, Luke? We're going down narrative street.
Oh,
I like
it.
This.
Yeah.
Antoine Winfield revenge game, he's healthy for this. You look at Minnesota having big run stuffing nose tackle O.J. Smith in this game. Blake Cashman is healthy in this game. So that's three new pieces that are going to be introduced into this defense. But the question is still going to remain to me, can this team stop the run? We talked about how the Maryland starting tackles were out last week. Damian Prince, Derwin Gray, both expected back. And I think the final thing to kind of remember here in terms of against the run is the opportunity rate stat that SB Nation has on their football study hall pages. Something I look at every week, multiple times a week, as I'm trying to go through the breakdowns to see where do the advanced stats say that Minnesota could potentially hold an edge. In terms of opportunity rate, that is defined as the percentage of carries in which the offensive line, quote unquote, does its job and produces at least 5 yards of rushing for their runners. That happens 47% of the time for Maryland. That's average in college football. Minnesota's front seven allows this to happen 45% of the time, which is average in college football. So in theory, these teams are pretty evenly matched. My big concern, though, is against the run, that is, Luke. Maryland has four running backs that have double-digit carries this year, and all four are over 5.8 yards a carry already. Now, it is against Texas, Temple, and Bowling Green, but considering how awful their offense was last week, you can see that those yards per carry were even down from that. I'm still worried about this run game, but against the pass, Luke, it's a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, it looks like they've basically amassed about 150 yards a game on offense. Their quarterback is 32 of 62 for 399 yards, two touchdowns and an interception. Not a terribly bad stat line. You compare that to Anixted, who's 44 of 79. Significantly more attempts, but he has for 537 yards, four touchdowns, and no interceptions. So, I mean, that they aren't giving him a ton of opportunity. I don't know what they have in the receiving game, but their leading receiver, at least from a yards perspective, has 97 compared to Tyler Johnson, who is 283. So they don't seem to show, like, at least statistically on paper, that they've got a lot to show in the passing game.
Yeah, Kasim Hill has not been great, and I think that's been putting it very kindly towards that young man. He's only, as you mentioned, throwing the ball about 20 times a game, and their passing offense has been abysmal. According to SB Nation, again, Football Study Hall, something I love to reference for team stats, the Maryland Terrapins, out of 129 FBS teams, have the least efficient passing game in all of college football. That is an astounding stat. You look at how does that happen? Because this Maryland offense hasn't been able to get on schedule. This is in Maryland offense, Luke. What do you think their average third down distance is? Like, well, 5, 6, 4?
So, okay, if I'm thinking that their running backs are averaging more than 5-some yards a carry, you know, they're probably getting, you know, a decent number of first downs on second down. So I'll go with probably like 7 yards.
Maryland's average third down distance through three games is 9.3 yards
what?
A carry.
What?
Excuse me, 9.3 yards.
So
the average third down distance is 9 yards. I don't even know how that happens.
Especially
when
you're
running the ball as effectively as they have.
How is that possible?
That's 9.3 distance is bottom five in the country. And as I said, considering how well they're running the ball, that tells you how inefficient this offense has been as a whole. So if I'm Rob Smith, I am loading the box, and I am making sure that if Maryland beats you on Saturday, it's not because of Ty Johnson, Anthony McFarland, their other running back, or Lolo Harrison. It's because Kasim Hill beats you with his arm, something he has not proven that he can do. And you mentioned the receiving options. This Maryland offense reminds me a lot of Minnesota last year, where they're stout at running back, but they lost DJ Moore, who terrorized Antonio Chenault in this matchup last year, is now with the Carolina Panthers, just caught his first touchdown. They don't really have any proven receivers on the outside that have proven that they can be able to do something. Kasim Hill hasn't been accurate. 50% completion percentage. It's been even worse than that if you talk to Maryland median fans. So if I'm Rob Smith in this game, if I can stop the run, you're going to give your offense an opportunity to win the game. If you can't stop the run, it's going to be a long day, because I don't have the amount of faith that if Kasim Hill can pull this off. Now, he's at home. He's coming off a bad game. Probably wants to prove himself. But I don't think that Maryland has the receivers on the outside to combat that. Now, Maryland's offense is a lot of eye dressing. You're going to see a lot of shifts, a lot of motions. This is a Maryland offense that this Minnesota defense is going to have to read their keys with. If Minnesota stays disciplined and can stop the run, I feel good about Minnesota's chances here going into Saturday morning.
All right, let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers are on offense. As we're well aware, they lost Rodney Smith. That changes the identity of this offense, at least from an impact player perspective, quite significantly on the season. Bryce Williams is now the leading rusher with 67 carries, 259 yards, and one touchdown. Obviously, we know that Seth Green has played a pretty significant role in the red zone, both running and now passing as well. Zach Anixed, as I said, is 44 of 79 for 537 yards and four touchdowns. The Gophers in total are fairly balanced yardage-wise. They're averaging 193 yards through the air per game and 181 on the ground. Conversely, Maryland is giving up a decent number of pass yards at 223 per game and 107 rushing. What sticks out to me, though, is the Gophers are averaging just under 32 points a game, where Maryland is giving up 26 points a game. They've given up 29 points to Texas, only 14 to Bowling Green, but then again 35 to Temple. So I am very curious to get your thoughts on this Maryland Terrapin defense, Ryan.
I think that they're better than what the stats indicate, and I think that this is one of my keys to the game, as we'll get into it a little bit later, but Minnesota's offensive line needs to win in the trenches. You look at this game last year, at home for Minnesota, 30 carries between Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. They average under 2.5 yards a carry. That sucks. That's terrible. That can't happen at home in the Big Ten and you expect to win the game. And I don't want it to happen again, especially being Zach Anixed's first road start. It comes in Big Ten play, and I'm sure Kirk Shiroka doesn't want Minnesota to throw it 35-plus times in his first Big Ten road game. But the individual matchups that I think are going to be very, very interesting that I'm going to have my eye on are Maryland defensive lineman Byron Cowart versus Minnesota's interior, and then star edge player Jesse Onabonum versus right tackle Sam Schluter. Byron Cowart is someone coming out of high school in 2015. He was a top five player in the country. Now, he's had some issues the places he's gone. He's gone from Auburn to JUCO to now at Maryland again. And I know that he has the physical talent to be an immediate impact player for them. He's shown that on tape. I think he's going to give Connor Olson and Blaze Andrews all they can handle. And then Jesse Onabonum is someone that was injured all of last season. But in 2016, last season he was healthy. He had 14 tackles for loss and 9 sacks. So he's fully healthy back here in 2018. We've talked about it a lot on Gopher Illustrated this week. We've talked about it on the Breakdown podcast. Sam Schluter has frankly struggled so far against pass protection. And going against one of the best edge rushers, I think, in the Big Ten, in Jesse Onabonum, Minnesota's already kept in a tight end at times to help their tackles, but I expect to see a lot more of that come Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. Now, the other big question for this game is, if Minnesota can't run the ball, they need to be able to pass it, and they need to be able to expand that target distribution. Through the non-conference here, Tyler Johnson has a gigantic target share for the second straight year. His target share of this offense is 45%. The next closest is Rashad Bateman at 25%. Last game specifically, Minnesota threw the ball 25 times with their quarterbacks, Johnson at 12 targets. If Minnesota's passing game is going to be different in Big Ten play, then guys like Rashad Bateman and Chris Hotman-Bell have to be more productive when they see targets. Now, I know it's not necessarily Rashad Bateman's fault for last week. He drew two deep pass interference penalties far down the field. Chris Hotman-Bell continues to be a big-time player for Minnesota between the hashes, but Minnesota needs somebody to help Tyler Johnson so he can avoid the double teams, the bracket coverage, and that's going to give the two freshmen, Rashad Bateman and Chris Hotman-Bell, a lot more one-on-one opportunities, and they have to be able to convert for that.
curious to see. I know that we thought that Rodney Smith was going to be a focal point in the passing game, you know, whether that be screens or, you know, swing passes or whatever. Do you see Bryce Williams taking that on potentially going as the season progresses? I know this maybe isn't relevant to the Maryland game, but you know, that seems to be a significant part of the offense that maybe obviously is lost with Rodney Williams or Rodney Smith.
Yeah, I think that you'll see it a little bit. Now, first of all, I apologize if you hear thunder and lightning in the background. I can assure you it's hailing outside my open window here right now. So I hope people are staying safe on a Thursday night. But when you look at Minnesota's running back distribution this week, I mentioned Mohamed Ibrahim very likely to be back in the mix. I still think that the lead back is going to be Bryce Williams. I asked Kirk Ciarrocca about that. You can check out the video on Gopher Illustrated. He doesn't want to give Bryce Williams 33 carries a week going forward. Now, what he does want to do is Bryce Williams has earned the right to continue to be the lead back, I believe, after his performance last week. But you're going to see Mohamed Ibrahim probably in there 8 to 12 times getting carries, trying to make sure they can save Bryce Williams' legs a little bit. Now, if you're going to have a passing game back between the two, I think that it's certainly going to be Bryce Williams. I think he can do more in space, whereas I think Mohamed Ibrahim is more of a north-south running back. And I still think it's funny that, guys, I have nothing against Mohamed Ibrahim or his family. There is literally nothing personal with it. I just think that Minnesota has a better talent at running back than him, and that's why Bryce Williams, I think, is going to continue to shine here in the Big Ten play going forward. But that being said, he's still going to be a vital part of this offense now that he's healthy. He's going to take Jonathan Femi-Cole's reps on third down, I think. He's just someone that's going to get 8 to 12 carries a game. And when you look at Minnesota wants to probably run it somewhere around 35 times a game, Zach Kanick said throw it around 27 to 30 times a game. You need to divvy up those carries somehow. But if you're going to have a passing game back in those screens, Luke, in my opinion, it's got to be Bryce Williams.
All right.
And here's the other big question for me this week. Is Seth Green going to get a freaking target?
That's a good question.
I am my mind is boggled that Seth Green is a passing touchdown and a running touchdown before he has a target in the passing game. Seth Green was Minnesota's best 50-50 winner during fall camp. Kirk Ciarrocca will tell you that. PJ Fleck will tell you that. But because of the way that Rodney Smith went down, the way that they've been effective with the Wildcat with him within the 15-yard line, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. In that same respect, you need to have Seth Green contribute to the passing game, because he gives you a different element, especially one where I know many folks are just yearning. Where are the tight end targets? Where are the Seth Green targets? I'm much more concerned about Seth Green getting a target than I am Jake Paulson, Bryce Witham, or Colton Beebe at this stage. Seth Green is much more dynamic than them. He's as big as them. Let's work in a little bit of Seth Green. I'm just asking for a target this week, Luke. I don't think that's tremendously hard to ask.
Yeah, that is a really good point. I mean, you lauded and praised him coming out of fall camp, and yet he still does not have that target, as you said. And it is interesting, but like you say, you know, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. So it will be interesting. I would love to see him line up at tight end, you know, here or there as well.
He's on the outside. They just don't target him, or they haven't targeted him here just yet. The other thing to note here is I asked Kirk Ciarrocca this week, are you surprised at Zach Anikstead's deep ball so far? And I prefaced it with, Zach was on during camp. You told me that. PJ told me that. I saw that with my own two eyes. Does it surprise you that it hasn't gone the way that you expected? He took about 10 seconds again. You can watch the video on Gopher Illustrated. And he says, it surprises me some, but he goes, the way I look at it, he's going to be due. He goes, you look at the way baseball guys, you know, you have a guy, you know, he's a 300 hitter. He starts out the season slow. And if you're the manager, you're like, well, he's going to hit 500 the rest of the way to get back up to 300. So Minnesota thinks he's doing, and Ciarrocca said he's had his two best weeks of practice in terms of throwing the deep ball. I just hope that really starts to translate over the game field.
Yeah, and that's really what, like you said, that's what won him the position, right, over Tanner Morgan.
It's one of the reasons. It's not,
I mean,
the sole reason,
right?
But what we saw during fall camp was a quarterback that wasn't afraid to push the ball down the field, have Minnesota have a downfield passing game for the first time in yesteryear, and he was successful doing it. Now, he continues to dial up shots, Kirk Soraka does. Zach Anikstad continues to throw them. There's been no turnovers yet, but you want to start to see those things being connected.
All right. So before we transition, we got to talk again about the goal line club. I want to highlight again, we've highlighted this a lot, but we've highlighted it for a reason. This Iowa tailgate is going to be a big deal. So you have until Wednesday of next week, today is Thursday the 20th. So you have until Wednesday of next week at 1 p.m. to sign up. We expect this to be a pretty big event. So make sure you sign up and can be a part of the festivities of that day. It's homecoming, nothing greater. Additionally, if you're going to be there and you're going to be at that tailgate and you're going to be there early, consider joining the tunnel team. It's only $10. It's a great opportunity for kids. Ryan was at the tailgate and talked to some people that did the tunnel team. They raved about it. So if you have younger kids, this is an awesome opportunity for not a lot of money to have a really unique experience at TCF Bank Stadium, especially on a big game like homecoming.
It will be. Like I said, I was at the tailgate there last Saturday, talked to a bunch of GLC people. I've talked to a few people who just listened to the podcast, and they wanted to know more. They wanted to, they'd never heard of the GLC tailgate before, as Luke said. It's all you can drink. You have plenty of food to choose from. Children under 10 are free. Kids between 11 and 20 pay their age at the door. And then the tunnel team, I keep harping about it. If you have kids, this is your opportunity to introduce them to Gopher football and create a memory that they're never going to forget. I talk about it all the time with Luke, because what do we have at the end of the day, Luke? We have our memories. So if you want to go out there and make a memory for your child that they'll never forget, and you'll be able to see how their face lights up as PJ Fleck and the team walk down, they can be able to touch and shake hands and get high fives. The tunnel team is a great way to do that. It's just $10. So if you want to learn more about the GLC tailgate for Iowa or the tunnel team, head to goalineclub.org.
All right, Ryan, before we get into your keys to the game, looking at this first Big Ten road test for the Gophers. The Gophers come in against the spread 3-0. They've done quite well thus far. Maryland comes in 2-1. The spread on this game has Maryland a one-point favorite with an over-under of 47. Additionally, looking at the weather for this game, it looks like it is going to be fairly nice weather, somewhere around kickoff, probably in the low 70s. Fairly low wind, maybe 7 miles an hour. Not a lot of chance for precipitation. It doesn't look like that day is bookended by some precipitation, but looks like a great day for some football in College Station. It's not College Station. I'm sorry, College Park.
Maryland. College Park. It does. It certainly beats the weather we've been having, as we've talked about.
As it literally thunders out our windows.
It literally and figuratively feels like it's been 62 degrees and raining and cloudy the entire week, because I think it has been.
Says the guy who complained about the 90-degree weather last week, so whatever.
Hey, I just want 55 degrees, a light south wind, 10 to 12, and some sunny skies, so I can go sit in my tree stand with my, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 trail cameras.
This is ludicrous. This is so ludicrous.
9 trail cameras, and Luke's trying to shame me. Let me live my life 2018. Hashtag let me live. I'm bow hunting Burnsy for a reason. I have an addiction. Now let me feed it.
Right.
When you look at this game, it's interesting because you look at the Vegas spread, started it in -1, worked its way up to Maryland -3.
If I was
back, Maryland -1.
If I was a better, I wouldn't touch this game for a multitude of reasons. One, it's a 50-50.
The only thing I would touch would be the over-under.
Sure.
I believe it's at 47 now.
Yeah.
Which means Vegas thinks that this is going to be a 24-23 game. I think that's potentially accurate, but if I see this way playing out for a Minnesota victory, which I do as of today, it's going to be the under.
Yeah, I don't touch it for this reason. Well, maybe you do, but I'm interested to see how the spread potentially swings as the Durkin dilemma comes out Friday sometime. I wouldn't be an early bettor on this game at all.
It'll be interesting. Now, Luke, let's have you get into your prediction before I give mine.
All right. you know, before the season started, I picked this as a loss for Minnesota. I hate to have to predict this before the Durkin news comes, but I'm going to go with a loss again. If you look at like ESPN's football power index, the Gophers are a 51.9% favorite. That, you know, that's really a coin flip of a game. This is on the road. We know how young they are. Their son's Rodney Smith. I still, call me a hater, I just don't believe in the defense quite yet, mostly from the standpoint that we haven't seen them take on a strong running attack. Yeah, I don't see this as a win. You know, they win this game, they're going to prove a lot to me probably. A lot that I probably wasn't expecting, but I have this as a loss. I have it as a 24-20 loss for the Gophers.
How many rushing yards does Maryland end up with?
Well, I would imagine it would be somewhere around about 225, 230.
All right. I've already essentially touched on my keys to the game already. I'll do it briefly here. Number one key to the game, I've talked about it at length. Minnesota has to stop the run. They didn't prove that they could do that at all last year. In the non-conference last year, they looked great. 3.26 yards a carry. Big Ten play comes 6.39 yards a carry to running backs. And then in the Big Ten road games last year, Minnesota gave up over 7 yards a carry to running backs. Now this year, Minnesota is averaging 3.72 yards a carry against running backs. If Minnesota is going to win this game, they have to keep it under probably 4.5 yards a carry to Lorenzo Harrison, Anthony McFarland, and Ty Johnson. They have a healthy Antoine Winfield. They have O.J. Smith. They have Blake Cashman. I think this game comes down to, in terms of how does Minnesota stop the run, is if Antoine Winfield and this secondary can tackle well in space. If they can tackle well, and if they can limit the 4 and 7 yard gains to just that, 4 and 7 yard gains instead of 44 and 47 yard touchdowns, well, then you're going to force this Maryland offense to stay on schedule, which they haven't been able to do. I talked about it. This is the least efficient passing offense in the country out of 129 teams, this Maryland passing offense. So if you're able to limit the big plays from the Maryland running backs, I think you're going to keep this game right where you want it. Secondly, you have to win in the trenches. I talked about it again. Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks averaged under 2.5 yards a carry last year at home on over 30 carries against this Maryland team. The two individual matchups I'll be watching, Maryland defensive lineman Byron Cowart against this interior of Minnesota's offensive line, and then Jesse Onabonum versus Sam Schluter. How much help will Minnesota give Schluter? Can Schluter improve, change his best, and have a fairly decent game against the pass against Jesse? He's going to need to, and this Minnesota offense is going to need that. So if Minnesota can find a way to win in the trenches, this is going to make it a very interesting game. And then finally, you have to get somebody other than Tyler Johnson involved. Last week, it seemingly was, Tyler Johnson, we're going to get you going before the conference play. Now it's got to be, yeah, Tyler, we're still going to use you a whole heck of a lot. But in that same respect, we need Rashad Bateman, Chris Hotman-Bell, and Seth Green, hopefully, to get into this target distribution for Minnesota. If you're Zach Anixton, you're throwing the ball 30 times a game, you can still throw it to Tyler double-digit times. You just need to have Rashad Bateman get 6 or 7. Chris Hotman Bell get 5. Seth Green, in a perfect world for me, gets 4 or 5. So this comes down to, how much do you believe in Minnesota's defense? I'm still skeptical they can't stop the run. The offense, with the amount of young players that Minnesota has, you'll be having a true freshman at quarterback getting his first road start, and it comes on the road in the Big Ten. Bryce Williams likely going to get the start at running back, a true freshman. You have 3 underclassmen on the offensive line getting their first start on the road this year. And then you look at your skill position players like Rashad Bateman, Chris Hotman-Bell, Seth Green, getting their first meaningful snaps on the road. That being said, Maryland's passing game is what has me optimistic right now because it sucks. It's anemic. It's dreadful. I don't foresee a ton of points in this game because I believe both teams are just going to sit there and stack the box and say, whichever young quarterback can beat us will beat us. And if we're going to lose that way, we're going to lose that way because we're not going to lose to your running games. I have more confidence in Zach Anixted and the weapons that Minnesota has than Maryland. And I have Minnesota 4-0 going into the bye. Minnesota 21, Maryland 20.
Look at you in your maroon colored glasses. I like it.
Stop.
I like it.
The way this is my biggest thing. You can say that, but you also have to listen to the reasoning. It's not like I'm saying.
I think
I'm not going Ron
sound.
Johnson on the bit. Minnesota 79, Maryland 0. The reasonings, and I just firmly believe that Minnesota is going to stack the box, and I'm hoping that they tackle as well as they've tackled in space the last two games, because if they do, they can at least limit Anthony McFarland, Lorenzo Harrison, Ty Johnson, and if they can, make Kasim Hill beat you. That's going to be Maryland's MO2 defensively. Make Zach Anixted beat us. If he can beat us, that's the way we're going to lose, but we need to see that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I guess from my perspective, I like your dialing it down to like which quarterback can win this. And you know, statistically speaking, Anixted's been the more consistent player. Additionally, I totally buy into Kirk Shiraka's baseball analogy. Like, he is due. Like, he's had a couple that were close. Like, think of the Demetrius Douglas one. Like, he's totally due.
I hope so. Again, Kirk's as frustrated as fans are. I shouldn't say frustrated. He's going to keep dialing up the deep shots, and he continues to see it at practice. Minnesota, Zach Anixted needs to hit two in a row, and I think you're going to see him go on a run, and I think you're going to see this offense potentially do some things against Iowa, but it needs to start this weekend. That deep passing game, if Minnesota is going to win this game, needs to find some kind of foothold.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I am eager to see what we learn about this defense. I would love to be wrong. Right now, based on what we've seen three teams that really want to, for the most part, really want to throw the ball and just haven't convinced me that they are real running threats. Maryland is. And, you know, depending on, you know, if those two starting tackles play again, whatever, we very well could learn a lot about this defense.
And maybe we find out tomorrow on Friday, for those of you who are looking for the Friday afternoon news dump, that's going to be the DJ Durkin one. We have no idea what to expect to what's going to come out of this. If DJ Durkin is fired, where is Maryland at mentally for this game? Because they were completely checked out last week. You'd like to think that they rebounded home, especially as Big Ten play starts, but maybe they're completely out of it. Or maybe that they have a chip on their shoulder trying to prove to Matt Canada that they're still in it. It's the big unknown. Welcome to trying to figure out where 18 to 22-year-olds have their head, which is half the game in college football, especially in Big Ten play, is do these 18 to 22-year-olds, especially once November comes, you want to play or do you want to go home because it's cold? Now, it's going to be warm. It's going to be low 70s. Where is Maryland at mentally is another big question mark for this game.
All right. So we want to thank everybody for listening to this preview of the Minnesota-Maryland game. Again, if you listen to the podcast and you like it, we would appreciate it.
That reminds me. We got a question.
We did. That's right. Somebody actually sent in a screenshot. And the question was in regards to injuries. Wait, we really should have done that during the injury portion of the podcast. We're terrible at our jobs.
Tony K. Dahlman asked the question for us. Again, if you want us to have us answer your question on the air, all you got to do is screenshot a review that you leave for the podcast, good, bad, or hopefully great, and we will answer your question. So his question is, how do the Gophers compare in recent years in injury losses compared to other teams? What are the biggest factors in college football injuries, random luck / player durability, team conditioning, team medical staff, etc.? Before I answer that, Luke, do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, let's first say that every single coaching staff ever says that they have the best athletic trainer on the face of the earth, and that's
and
the reason.
Best strength coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like they always. I shouldn't say athletic trainer. The conditioning coach, right? Like so, a strength trainer, and they always say that that's going to be the difference that combats injuries. I think that there's probably some truth to that. But I always find it just humorous that they say, well, we have the best strength and conditioning program and that's what keeps our injuries down. I don't think that that's entirely true, but there is an element of truth to that to some extent.
My thoughts on it are it's difficult to quantify. And I know that Tony wants us to quantify for it. I think the question you should ask, and I don't know of a website or a place that tracks this, but things like ACL tears you can't really see those coming. There's no preemptive soreness, or it just happens when it happens and you're out for the season. Now, soft tissue injuries and high ankle sprains and how quickly people can come back from that, I think Minnesota specifically this year is about as healthy as we've seen this team in years. Now, the one injury is the one to the most prolific offensive player in Roddy Smith.
The one we said it's couldn't happen.
The one that we said couldn't happen, because Shannon Brooks had the other one that we said couldn't happen. Other than that, we're looking great. That being said, you can't really – what are you going to do to try and prevent ACL tears? I don't know that there is a whole lot. No, I'm not a medical professional, probably unlike some of our listeners out there. But in terms of how does Minnesota compare in recent years to other teams, I think Minnesota is probably in that top 25% of injury luck so far. They don't really have – a ton of injuries outside of Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. Now, what is the biggest factor in college football injuries? I'd say it's a combination of everything you said. Random luck, player durability. You know, let's go through each one of these. Random luck. You want to stay, be able to stay healthy. You look at a place like Wake Forest. Wake Forest, it's defensive backs. They've lost four defensive backs to senior season-ending injuries in the first 3 weeks. That's just terrible luck, whereas Minnesota's lost two total players. Now, you look at player durability. That's another big thing that is so different player by player. Maybe one player can play through an ankle sprain at 75% and be productive, where a different player can't play through 75% and he just melts into a shell because he's an 18 to 22-year-old guy. You never know how a player is going to react to a specific injury until it happens. And then finally, team conditioning and team medical staffs. Luke said it. Everybody thinks they have the greatest strength and conditioning coach or the greatest nutritionist, or the greatest trainers on the face of the earth. It comes down to, I think this year, the lack of injuries soft tissue-wise that you've seen from Minnesota so far has been a good indication to me that they're doing their job. Now, Keandre Thomas left for a bit of time versus Fresno State, but he was healthy and ready to go the next week against Miami. Didn't look like he re-injured it. So, Tony, long story short, multitude of different ways to go about it, but those are our thoughts.
Yeah, the I think the last thing that I would add to that would be that the way that certain colleges practice takes a completely different form university to university, right? So let's just look at the difference between maybe I guess I can't maybe speak to PJ Fleck runs practices, but Jerry Kill, like, they ran a very physical practice all season, right? And we saw numerous guys go down with concussions,
to the effect of many players and player families were very upset about it.
Right. But yes. Exactly. But they ran really tough physical practices where, you know, talking to like someone like Derek Burns has said, you know, there are certain people that they do very little to minimal hitting, you know, past a certain point in the season. Right. And it's very much not as physical. And I think that definitely has a way to contribute to injuries, especially the ones that are practice related, just how physical you go in practice, especially when it comes to, you know, the very hot topic of concussions and CTE, etc.
I think we answered it pretty well, Luke. Should we get on out of here?
Yeah. Again, want to thank everybody for listening. If you rate or review the podcast, you take a screenshot, send it in on Twitter to probably Ryan, because he's a lot better at Twitter than I am. You can reach him at Ryan Burns MN on Twitter. Yeah, we'd appreciate that. Again, we want to thank the Goal Line Club for sponsoring the podcast this season, and go Gophers.